This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We're going to talk about power, the judiciary. Jim Jordan is going to join us. We have Senator Ron Johnson here. These guys have all kinds of things on their mind tonight on I'm Right. Let's talk about power. Power in the judiciary and why we're seeing so many things that we're seeing. First, it's hard for normal people to understand how evil people look at power. You know, because I would venture a guess that you don't live your life seeking it out so you can use it for your friends, for yourself, and to punish your enemies. That's kind of an odd way to look at life, right? You probably don't want your kids to grow up and think in those terms. And so because that's not your value system, it can be hard to relate to people whose value system it is. But it's really important, not that you become that, but that you understand that's how communists operate at all times. Everything is about the acquisition of power and then using power to reward your friends and punish your enemies. It's how they look at everything. And when I say that, it's easy to think, well, yeah, that's why they want to be United States presidents. That's why they want to be senators. No, it's more than that, you see. They will seek out even the most minute amount of power so they can use it on behalf of the revolution. Maybe it is the office of the presidency. Maybe it's the local librarian and everything else in between. The local librarian doesn't have a great deal of power. She can't raise your taxes, open up your border. She only has a wee little bit. Her little bit of power is what books go where. Should we display this book here or that book there? What kind of guests are invited for the free reading they're doing for kids on Saturday? So with her minute amount of power, she makes sure the LGBTQ demon books are set right at the front of the kiddie section, and she's already arranged for you, the taxpayer, to pay for a drag queen and come read to your children with his penis hanging down on Saturday. This is how communists think, and normal people are always taken aback by communists because they don't think in this way. So before we get to the judiciary specifically, what is real, genuine power? What's almost the height of power? You know, we all of us, we are fascinated by the concept of organized crime. Hopefully you're horrified by it, but everyone's fascinated by it. Maybe it's the Italian mafia, drug cartels, biker gangs. We're fascinated by it. This underworld of powerful people who control territory, do crimes. But what's real power? Is it all the guns? Is it a willingness to commit murder? That's never been historically the real power of organized criminal organizations. Mexico, we'll make it about the cartels. Which ones gain power? They're the ones who find a way to buy off the judicial system. You know, in Mexico, if you hear a story, read a story about a couple people shot in the head, left in a ditch on the side of a road, do you know there's a reasonable chance it was the cops who did it? Cops will show up at a restaurant, throw you in handcuffs, throw you in the back of a squad car, and go shoot you in the head. Owning the power of the justice system is probably the height of power in any country. It probably exceeds political power. The power of a CEO certainly exceeds the power of the librarian. Judicial power, having the legal system, not just cops, of course. We're talking about judges. We're talking about prosecutors. When the legal system, when you have the power of the state, it's worth so much more than the power of all your guns and your willingness to commit murder. We routinely point out to clownish idiots on the left, certainly ones that achieve power in the justice system, and we mock them, and rightly so, but we should understand why they're there. I mean, Ketanji Brown Jackson is probably exhibit A for this. This woman, still can't believe this is real, this woman is a Supreme Court justice.
Female empowerment! like it too. I think what I like about it is that I am having a very strongly negative reaction to it. Like I hate it. Which makes me think it must be brilliant.
That's a Supreme Court justice. She's on the bench for life. This woman here, calling black people essentially disabled. This is a Supreme Court justice.
Congress passed the Americans with Disabilities Act against the backdrop of a world that was generally not accessible to people with disabilities. And so it was discriminatory in effect because these folks were not able to access these buildings. The idea in Section 2 is that we are responding to current day manifestations of past and present decisions that disadvantage minorities and make it so that they don't have equal access to the voting system, right? They're disabled. In fact, we use the word disable in Milligan. We say that's a way in which you see that these processes are not equally open.
So why put her there? We're mocking her. I'm laughing at her. You're laughing at her. We're rolling our eyes. They must feel so stupid. No, you see, you would feel stupid. I would feel stupid. If I said, hey, you'd be a perfect Supreme Court justice. You go sit on the Supreme Court. And then they went and sat on the Supreme Court and routinely proved themselves to be brain dead. I would have some level of embarrassment, wouldn't you? Oh, gosh, I can't believe he's one of ours. What did we do? But that's because you don't think like the communist does. The communist is not concerned about embarrassment at all. The communist is not concerned about intelligence, qualifications. They're not concerned about your laughter. The communist is concerned about what? Power. The point is, Ketanji Brown Jackson, for the duration of her time on the Supreme Court, will be a reliable communist ally. She will spend every waking moment fighting tooth and nail on behalf of her friends and trying to destroy her enemies. It's just simply about power. And look, it's not like she's the only judge in the country. Every day we wake up and we pick up the newspaper, or at least the digital version of it, and there's a new outrage about a judge here, an injunction there. But we should understand that's why those judges were put into place. They weren't put there to preside over cases. They weren't put there to accurately interpret the law. That's childish thinking in the mind of the communists. That's how you think. That's how I think. Those judges are there to help the revolution. Who's Exhibit A for these judges who are issuing all these nationwide injunctions? Judge Boasberg. Boasberg's the one, he's the name most people know by now. Certainly if you're a political person, you know him. All these nationwide injunctions. And then you dig in more into Justice Boasberg and you find out he was the judge giving legal cover to Arctic Frost, that ridiculously illegal investigation by Jack Smith and the FBI, hoovering up text messages and phone numbers. How could that be legal? Well, all you had to do was find a judge, a revolutionary in judge's robes, and he'll give it the sign off on everything. Judge Boasberg. Eric Swalwell, by the way. Eric Swalwell, the guy who has mortgage fraud allegations draped all over him right now. Guess which judge just randomly got assigned to the case of Eric Swalwell? You guessed it. Judge Boasberg. Now, I'm going to say this. We have a long, hard road ahead of us, you and I do, to fight back against the communist revolution in this country. There are so many battles we have to fight. Believe me, we're never lacking a battle. If you wake up and you're bored politically and you're looking for something to do, there's always something. Local race, a national race, this group or that group, there's always something to do. But there is something that is true. We're going to have to acknowledge it. We can never see victory, final victory, over the communists until we root out the communists from the justice system in this country. I'm talking about the judges, I'm talking about the AGs, I'm talking about the DAs. Until we root communist revolutionaries out of the justice system in the country, we will never be able to see final victory because that's where so much power lies.
Somalia is hot in the news right now because Somalia is a disgusting country full of fraud and they abuse women. It's just basically the worst place on planet Earth. And because our politicians are evil, satanic monsters, they brought as many Somalis into the United States as they possibly can. And surprise, surprise, now they're murdering people, robbing cars, and committing fraud all over the place. Well, Keith Ellison is the Attorney General of Minnesota. Surely he's all over all these cases, right? Yeah, I'm sure he's going to get right on that.
Most importantly, we're not going to turn our backs on our neighbors. But because, of course, Somali immigrants are good for Minnesota, just like Hmong immigrants are good for Minnesota, Mexican immigrants are good for Minnesota, German, Italian, Irish, Norwegian immigrants are good for Minnesota, and Anishinaabe and Dakota people are good for Minnesota, they are together what makes us us.
I'm sure the Somali investigations are forthcoming. You know why he's there. He's there to take the incredible power of his office and reward his friends, protect his friends, and punish his enemies. How do these attorney generals, how do these AGs look at their role? Well, we're going to go listen to Clarence Thomas. You see, Christianity itself, communism has always viewed it as the enemy. They've been at war with it forever. I know your skinny jeans wearing pastor won't mention it on Sunday. You might offend somebody, but they're at war with Christians and Christianity. And I mean, what would they do if you had the power of the AG? They'd do things like this.
Did you have complaints that formed the basis of your concern about the fundraising activities here?
We certainly had complaints about crisis pregnancy centers that petitioned.
No, about this crisis pregnancy center.
So I think we've been clear from the outset that we haven't had complaints about this specific.
So you had no basis to think that they were deceiving any of their contributors?
I don't think that's correct, Your Honor. I think we had carefully canvassed all of the public information that is provided on the website of First Choice in making a determination that we wanted to initiate an investigation.
But you had no factual basis.
The Office of Attorney General identified a pregnancy center helping women choose life, a pregnancy center that didn't even have complaints against it. And they launched an investigation to destroy it because that's how communists use power. We can never reach the mountaintop. We can never see final victory over the communists until we root them out of our justice system. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Somebody who knows a little something about Judge Boasberg is Jim Jordan. We're going to talk to Jim Jordan about that in just a moment. Now, maybe you're thinking, I lack energy for this fight. I can't do this. I'm tired. Well, that's just because you haven't been taking your natural herbal supplements from Chalk. I'm not tired. I feel fantastic. I'm ready to rock and roll. You know, natural herbal supplements are going to have you feeling good, right? That's really what it's about. It's about you getting home from work, getting home from school, and not being completely out of gas, counting the seconds until you can crawl into bed. What if you could get home from work and feel fantastic all the time? That's how I feel, because I've been taking a male vitality stack from Chalk for years. Took it again this morning, every single morning. Greatest thing I've ever done in my life, from my personal life, from my business life. Try it. It's the Christmas season right now. There are specials. Go get a subscription. Chuck.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Arctic Frost continues to get uglier and uglier the more we know. We find out now they were hoovering up the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee's phone records for 2 years. These people have some guts. I'll give them that. Joining me now, a congressman from the great state of Ohio, home of the Ohio State Buckeyes, Congressman Jim Jordan. So what exactly were they doing to you?
Getting your phone records. They know who you called, who called you, when you called them, how long you were on the call. And if you initiated the call, they knew where you were at because they could bounce it off the cell tower. So look, they're not getting the content, but they can pattern your life. I mean, every morning when my wife's not here in D.C., I text my wife. So they know that, oh, he's texting to this number. You call your brother, you call your best friend, you call your colleague, you call the president. They know who you're, that is creepy to me. So they were doing that for all kinds of members of Congress, all kinds of American citizens, because they thought somehow there was this grand conspiracy to promote alternate electors and change. Like, what are you talking about? And President Trump was somehow going to be prosecuted because he was the architect of this grand conspiracy. That's how ridiculous it is. And the things they did to, like, again, members of Congress. And for me, we found out it was for 2.5 years, which makes no sense, because they go clear back to, I believe it was January of 2020. So before the election, before January 6th, what the heck is that about? Again, I think when you talk about the weaponization of government, this is it, in a nutshell.
Congressman, do you get the impression that they actually thought there was a grand conspiracy? Or is this just the bottom line of how these dirty commies have always operated? You take control of the judiciary and you use it to attack your political opposition. And if that means harassing Jim Jordan and finding out when he texts his wife, well, that's just a nice benefit.
I think it's probably both. I do think these are, I always say, I always say not all Democrats are crazy, but the left that controls their party is. And the left is truly out to get President Trump. We've seen that time and time again over the last decade. So I do think it's driven by these people are probably left-leaning Democrats who are like, we're going to get Trump. We know he's bad. That kind of crazy mindset. So I think it's that. Plus, but I think it's also like, we're just going to go after it. And because we believe that, we're willing to go after our enemies and go to whatever length we can, whatever means we think is appropriate. But yeah, these guys were serious. I just read that book by the left journalist Carol Linig called Injustice. And it chronicles this whole thing after January 6th and what happened at the Justice Department. And it's amazing how, she thinks Jack Smith is, just a saint, and all these guys who, Wyndham and Bratt and Cooney and Olson, all these guys who worked at the Justice Department, who worked on Artie Frost and then became part of the special counsel's investigation, how great these guys are. It's just a mindset that the left has, and I think that's kind of what's driving. I mean, think about the subpoena for our phone records, my phone records. It said to the judge, you can't tell Verizon, you can't tell the customer, in this case me, you can't tell the customer that the Justice Department got his phone records, because we think he might tamper with evidence, might be a flight risk. Like, I was going to leave the country. I mean, this is the dumbest stuff I've ever seen. But that's what these guys did. That's the subpoena they signed. That's what they sent. Judge okayed it. And Verizon couldn't tell me. That's crazy. But that's what they did.
Well, St. Jack Smith just got referred to the DOJ for obstruction of Congress by you. What does this mean? Does he get rung up for something? How does this work?
No. I want a slight correction. Wyndham, his deputy, we referred to Justice Department for obstructing our investigation. Wyndham is the guy who signed off on a lot of these subpoenas. What we did today is we actually sent a subpoena to Jack Smith to come in and sit for a deposition. So we have subpoenaed, we subpoenaed Wyndham to come in for a deposition. He claimed all kinds of things, tried to obstruct our investigation. So we referred him to the Justice Department for prosecution. And we don't do this often. I mean, the facts got to be there. We rarely will do that. But we did it in the case of Wyndham because we think he earned it. We think he deserves it. We thought it was warranted. With Jack Smith today, though, we're sending out a subpoena. We want him to come in for a deposition. We want to ask him about all the things we've been talking about, the countless number of members of Congress that he got phone records on, and a host of other issues that we think are important. Now, we've deposed Wyndham, we've deposed Bratt, we've deposed Cooney, and we're going to depose others who were part of his investigation. But we subpoenaed Jack Smith today to come in for his deposition.
Judge Boasberg is somebody, it's a name well known by this point in time on the right. He's Mr. Injunction guy, Mr. Arctic Frost guy. He always seems to be there. Now he miraculously got the Eric Swalwell case. What a miracle. What can be done about this guy?
Well, we've done some things legislatively, on this injunction issue to name one, where we said you can't, if a federal judge, and there's like, I think 700 of these around the country, if they issue an injunction, it should only apply to the parties in the case in that respective jurisdiction. So that bill, it's passed the House. It's still over in the Senate. We hope the Senate will take it up and pass it. So we're working on some things legislatively. We're doing our oversight. And as you know, there have been members, actually one member even of our committee, who's filed impeachment resolution against Mr. Boasberg for some of the actions he's taken. So we're taking this step by step. Typically, you don't impeach judges unless they're engaged in like truly criminal behavior, or they're showing up drunk on the job, or you know, something crazy like that. If it's based on decisions, there's always the remedy of the appellate court. So historically, our country has not looked at impeachment for bad decisions. But in this case, if you just take this gag order, this non-disclosure order that Boasberg signed for a number of my colleagues who the Justice Department was getting their phone records on, what's the remedy? There's no appeal process because the person who's been aggrieved doesn't know because the judge said, Verizon, AT&T, you can't tell them. So there's no remedy to the concern there. So I do think this is, Boasberg's getting in kind of some unique territory, and we're looking at all options as we move forward. But we're taking this step by step, and of course the next step is Jack Smith coming in for his deposition.
Congressman, is there any part of you, I mean, I understand you're a tough guy and a wrestler and whatnot, is there any part of you that feels bad for the University of Michigan? I mean, they don't win now, and now they couldn't even beat us. And I mean, I'm almost sympathetic at this point in time.
Well, it's been, as you know, Jesse, I love the Buckeyes, from Ohio, coached at Ohio State, but I went undergrad at the University of Wisconsin, and the Badgers have had a tough couple of years as well. We actually have, it's interesting, we're talking today, we actually have a bill on the floor that we think will help the situation, this what's called the SCORE Act. We think it's a good step to help give a little more parity to make sure we have opportunity for all student athletes, not just football and basketball, but the Olympic sports and women's sports as well. And our bill, I also think, we try to remember with this legislation that it's supposed to be about getting an education. You know, right now we have a situation where we get a lot of people who play 5 years and transfer four times and never get a degree, maybe never go to class, for goodness sake. They just played sports. And okay, but you know, I thought it was supposed to be student-athlete. So we got some legislation that we think can be helpful around the board, but yeah, I'm not losing a whole lot of sleep over Michigan losing to the Buckeyes and the Buckeyes being number one and undefeated on the season.
It is a shame, isn't it? It's a shame. Congressman, thank you, sir. I appreciate you. We have Senator Ron Johnson joining us in a moment. He's going to talk a bit more about this Arctic Frost stuff. And I'm going to ask him, the FBI, Kash Patel, the Butler assassination, are we getting what we need? Do we think we have an ally there? We'll talk to him about that. Before we talk to him about that, I'm going to eat some chips. All right. I eat a lot of chips. Here in the studio, if you go to the kitchen, you're going to see chips. And you're going to see Vandy Crisps is what you're going to see. I love them. I'm a potato chip man and a corn chip man, and potato chips are horrible for you. What happens when you pull your finger out of a bag of potato chips, the kind you buy in the grocery store? They're all covered in grease and terrible, and you know it's bad for you. You know that Vandy Crisps taste better, and there's three ingredients? No seed oil stuff. It's made in beef, tallow, salt, potatoes. They're fantastic. Multiple flavors. You can eat chips guilt-free. That's what Vandy Crisps delivers to you and to me, and I need that because I'll die without chips. Don't die. Go to VandyCrisps.com and use the promo code JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, Arctic Frost is not done. It's not going away. The little we found out so far appears to be just the tip of the iceberg. Senator Ron Johnson, by the grace of God, is still all over this thing, which you can understand being as how he was a victim of it. Joining me now, Senator from the state of Wisconsin, Senator Ron Johnson. All right, Senator, apparently we have new documents, more documents coming. What's new and what's coming?
Well, we're starting to get the information kind of dribs and drabs, unfortunately. But we're starting to understand more of the predicate behind these things. Again, in general, they wanted to criminalize what, for example, John Kennedy did in providing an alternate slate of electors when there were disputes over some states' accounts. Perfectly legitimate. Al Gore should have done that. He might have been president of the United States had the Supreme Court actually seen some alternate slate of, or alternate slate of electors from Al Gore. So again, they're trying to criminalize that behavior, but bottom line, this is a massive partisan dragnet designed to cripple the Republican Party. They don't care who they're going after, obviously targeting Trump, targeting a few members of Congress, but I think what's most disturbing is they've targeted just ordinary Americans. Like, keep pointing to the 38 Wisconsinites. Again, God-fearing, country-loving, law enforcement-supporting people, also in Jack Smith's crosshairs. It's really despicable.
No, it is despicable. You said you're getting it in dribs and drabs, Senator. I understand there are legal ways things have to be done, so I don't want to speak out of turn here. But why dribs and drabs? Why? I mean, you're a senator. Can't they just go drop the files on your desk and say, here they are?
They have a review process, and there are legitimate things that probably need to be redacted on some of these. You know, my biggest issue, I think, my biggest concern continues to be the FBI and Department of Justice do not have the staff. I mean, they obviously had to terminate people. A lot of partisan leftists left because they certainly couldn't serve in the Trump administration. And with all the lawfare undertaken by people like Jim Troupas, the person of high integrity who just happened to be the lawyer for President Trump in Wisconsin, they're destroying the man. $1 million in legal fees, got him up on felony forgery charges. So again, it doesn't take too many people to hang in the public square before other folks get in line. So it's difficult for Pam Bondi and Cash Patel to hire the numbers of people they need to do all the work that needs to be done.
Are we confident they're going to be able to? And do you have a time frame on that? Because I understand what you're saying is true. I have all kinds of friends in Washington that tell me the same thing. We don't have the horses. Well, are we hiring the horses? Are the horses out there, or are we out of horses?
Again, if you're a up-and-coming lawyer in a law firm that you know other lawyers who represented Trump were blacklisted, if you see what they've done to Judge Troupas, would you say, oh, yeah, I want to join the Trump administration for 3 years and have my entire legal career destroyed? Again, that is the most despicable part of the lawfare. It's bad enough, you know, being a target of it, but the impact it has across the board. So, no, this is a real problem. It's a real issue.
Let's focus on the Butler assassination, because the lack of information we have is amazing, but maybe we don't lack information. Maybe it's just a simple solo shooter that wasn't working with anybody else. I find that difficult to believe, but I don't know everything. What do you know? What's Cash Patel saying? What happened in Butler?
So this isn't going to very satisfy you very much either. We don't know much. Again, I pretty well assumed when President Trump took office, put his people in place, takes a couple months to get geared up, but they would want to get to the bottom of this. All of a sudden, we're on the anniversary of the assassination attempt, and we're looking at our own bipartisan investigation, really hadn't gone very far. But that's where I kind of geared back up and said, we still don't know what's happening. So I issued a very friendly subpoena to Cash Patel, kind of to nudge him, say, the American people need to know this. And we just haven't gotten much. We've got some more information out of the Pennsylvania State Police. We're getting, for example, different videos, that type of thing, out of different sources. Again, we're doing our investigation. And you can't spill every little piece of information as soon as you get it, but we still have a long way to go. I don't know much about, we're not getting information out of the administration there. We're hoping maybe some of the telephone carriers and stuff will give us more information, but there are right now, from my standpoint, far more unanswered questions than we have answers for you.
Senator, to get specific, you at one point in time told us on this show that there was a gentleman there in a suit in the immediate aftermath of it who was hoovering up pictures from the cops of the whole scene, and you tracked down his phone number. Turned out he worked for the ATF and lawyered up when you reached out to him. Did anything ever come of that?
I don't believe we've talked to that individual yet either. They keep him pretty well shielded from us. So no, this is, you know, Jesse, I know it's not very satisfying. There's only so much I can do. We can keep requesting, we can issue subpoenas. It's difficult for Congress to enforce subpoenas. Generally we use subpoenas to get people to volunteer information. People don't like to be issued subpoenas. But enforcing those is very difficult.
Speaking of enforcing subpoenas, Peter Navarro, Steve Bannon, these men went to jail because they said no to Congress when the subpoena came down. Judge Boasberg just said no. Is he going to jail?
I can't make that prediction, but we're not going to let up on Judge Boasberg. Right now, what he's doing is he's hiding behind the grand jury protected 6E material. And what we need Pam Bondi and this administration to do is request that the courts unseal that. So right now, Judge Boasberg is hiding behind the fact that these are grand jury protected information that, again, he's in charge of sealing. He won't unseal them. We really need to start putting pressure from the administration to get him to unseal that information. I don't have the authority to do it myself, but we've requested that from Pam Bondi.
FDA just came out and said 10 kids died of the COVID vaccine. So, of course, the number is probably higher than that. But we had every medical institution, political institution, media institution in this country telling parents they had to do that, or Aiden, Jaden, and Braden will die and kill grandma on the way. And now we have kids who are dead. Is anybody ever going to be held to account for that? Because there are a lot of jaded people in this country, myself included, to be honest.
First of all, that is just the tip of the iceberg. It might be a good first baby step, but that's all it is. You know, for somebody like myself, who've been monitoring VAERS since early in 2021, we're up to close to 39,000 deaths worldwide associated with the COVID injection. 24% of those occurred on the day of injection within 1 or 2 days. So I know it doesn't prove causation, but man, that's correlation that federal health officials definitely should have been concerned about and tracking. You can put that same concern about all the vaccine injuries on the childhood schedule as well. There's a great book just out by Aaron Seary, Vaccines Amen. I'd recommend you and all your listeners read that. It's really a very good source document, almost a seminal work. It'll talk about the religion of vaccines and the belief system absent of science. We do not do adequate double-blind placebo-controlled studies on any of the childhood vaccines. We've not done any. The studies are so unbelievably underpowered. It's all about getting that license, and then once you've been licensed, once you have FDA approval, now you have liability protection, and then nobody, not the people who approved it, not the pharmaceutical companies, nobody wants to follow up on adverse events following that. So no, this is a completely corrupt system. These federal agencies have been completely captured. The people, just like Cash Patel and Pam Bondi, are dealing with these partisan bureaucrats that are burrowed in the agencies trying to sabotage what they're doing. Bobby Kennedy faces the exact same issue. So that fact that we know about 10 of them, that's an internal memo leaked. I'm not sure it was supposed to be leaked or whatever, but that is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, people like Dr. Peter McCullough, they reviewed autopsies, which, by the way, were very difficult to obtain during COVID because they didn't want to know what was causing all these sudden adult deaths. Remember that, you know, we always know about SIDS, infant death syndrome. All of a sudden we had SADS, sudden adult death syndrome. And what happened to that? What about all these sports figures, these news personalities dropping over at their workstation or on the field of play? You know, they were recovered oftentimes on local news, but not on national media. Not part of the COVID cartel there. So no, this is just the tip of the iceberg. It's really what motivates me. It's one of the main reasons I ran for a third term when I'd rather just go home, is we need to expose all of this. The corruption of our pharmaceutical industry, of our federal health agencies that are supposed to be regulating them. Quite honestly, the corruption within establishment medicine, cures that they won't even look at that could be a whole lot cheaper. We've got a real problem with medicine. And this is coming from a dad whose child was saved by the miracle of modern medicine with the, you know, open heart surgery at the age of 8 months. So it pains me to talk about our medical establishment that saved my daughter's life. We've got real problems with it.
Don't retire, Senator, please. You're one of the few we actually need there. Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, it's a big reason why I drink cowboy colostrum every morning. Honestly, I never used to be that guy, but that's why I put cowboy colostrum in my coffee every single morning. I don't want to go to the doctor. I don't trust him. I don't trust the medical institutions in this country, and so my plan, it'll fail eventually, but my plan is to avoid the doctor as much as possible. My gut operates better with cowboy colostrum in my coffee. It just does. I was told by someone who had all kinds of stomach problems that hey, this is great for your gut. It's great for your gut. It fixed all my problems. So I just started pouring it in there. You know, heartburn every now and then, kind of normal stuff. Gone. My gut operates like I'm 20 years old again. Go try some. It's delicious, by the way. I put the chocolate in my coffee, but they have vanilla and strawberry and all that. CowboyColostrum.com, code JesseTV. Try a bag. We'll be back. Well, this auto pen stuff, Trump loves to talk about it. He even has Joe Biden's portrait up in the White House, and it's a picture of the auto pen, which is hilarious, by the way. But he's always talking about how Joe Biden's auto pen executive orders, they're all null and void. And the pardons, they're all null and void. But it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to have that actually be true. Let's ask Alex about that. Joining me now, Alex Sawyer, author of the book Lawless Lawfare. She writes, well, she's the editor at large for the Washington Times. All right, Alex, how does this work? Can he do this? Is he doing this? I don't understand.
I think that he is going to try. And so I think the answer is yes and no, to be direct. So he can pretty much outdo, reverse all of President Biden's executive orders. We see presidents do this all the time, right? Usually when a new administration comes in, they do away with what the prior administration did by executive order. That's why they always say try to go through Congress, because it sticks. And so with Biden's auto pen, when it comes to executive orders, yes, Trump can just reverse those. When it comes to legislation that might have been signed by the auto pen or pardons, that's quite different. And in fact, I was doing a little bit of research because this question has come up so much, and there looks like there's actually precedent. I think it dates back all the way to the 1800s, but in relation to pardons, something to the effect, I'm guessing it was a little bit of dicta, I need to like dig into the case more, but that pardons are pretty permanent, and that there's nothing that says in the Constitution that it must be signed by an real signature rather than an auto pen. So, you know, I think that there's a hard chance that the president can make an argument that he can reverse President Biden's pardons. But of course, I love to cover the Supreme Court. And if a challenge like that were to arise, it would be one of my highlights to cover for sure. Another unprecedented Trump.
Well, good. Let's talk about what you love, the Supreme Court, because Trump is banking on some W's there for some things that are coming down the pike. You've written about this. What's coming? Are we going to win? Are we going to cry?
Yeah. So you know what? There's some interesting cases that are pending, waiting for decisions right away. So first of all, we've talked about the Trump tariff issue. I think you and I have talked before about that. And so really, the Supreme Court could issue a decision on President Trump's argument that he has to implement tariffs in a way that's based on emergency powers, essentially, that he cites the trade deficit and the issue with fentanyl flowing in the country. Now, small businesses had challenged that. They had said, no, it's really Congress that should be the one that lays, they lay and collect taxes. They should be the ones that have the authority with tariffs. So though that has been before the justices, they could really issue a ruling anytime. And I know the president, the administration wants them to do so, so they can go ahead and, you know, further their tariff agenda. So that's one that could come anytime. The other one that is super interesting, obviously, with all the news about the National Guardsmen being shot here in D.C., is there's a case before the Supreme Court pending about the president's attempt to deploy National Guard to Chicago. So that's been briefed. Anytime the justices today they could issue a decision and order about whether the president has the authority to issue National Guardsmen to Chicago. And we see this in lower courts. I think we've talked about how DC courts have ruled. There's also been appellate courts out in the Ninth Circuit. We've seen challenges with LA, Portland, various cities that have been fighting this. And so how the Supreme Court rules, it'll be very important. It'll be guidance for lower courts if they go in other cities, for example. And then lastly, one of the topics that has been huge is the whole gerrymandering issue with like the Texas map in California. I'm sure you've covered this. We might have talked about this previously, but there, the Texas map is actually before the Supreme Court, and they let it, you know, the one where basically Republicans were able to, I think there's like five new seats that they were able to maneuver by changing district lines. And the Supreme Court has allowed, at least temporarily, for that new map to take effect. And so now that those briefs are in, they could issue a decision whether or not to stay that way, stay the course, or to reverse that and halt the new map. And that's just interesting because we know, you know, California is doing the same, trying to cancel out five Republican seats. We're going to probably see other states, blue and red, try to do the same. So how the Supreme Court comes down there will also be interesting guidance going forward.
Alex, I know you probably hate it when I ask you this, but I always have to ask. I'm uniquely interested in those gerrymandering cases because it's the House of Representatives at stake here. Do you have any kind of a sense of which way that's going to go? Surely they're not going to do something like allow California to do it and not allow Texas, right?
Right. That's absolutely true. Now, the way that these cases are getting before the justices are that people are making arguments that the way that the lines are redrawn is basically racial discrimination. So a lot of these gerrymandering cases get before the court because they have to make basically a voting rights or a civil rights argument. The court already has a case before it right now pending that they heard oral arguments in earlier this, I think it was at the start of the term in October, if I remember right. And it has to do with maps out of Louisiana. And essentially, if they're going to do away with part of the Voting Rights Act, which deals with the majority minority districts, a group of white voters have basically challenged non-black voters and said that having a second minority district has disenfranchised, it basically violated the 14th Amendment, that they're using race as a factor in drawing these lines and that's unconstitutional. So how they come down on that could impact what they do with these gerrymandering cases, because if they, you know, were to say yes, like we side with these voters in Louisiana, that really makes some of these claims trying to challenge any gerrymandering maps hard because they have to point to race or racial discrimination in doing so. They can't point really to partisan or political gerrymandering. The court has previously said, you know, that that's a political question. That's not one for the courts to decide. So it kind of looks like the only way to really get your gerrymandering case before the justices is to find some sort of racial undertone. So we're going to have to kind of see if the justices have any sort of appetite for that.
Do we have any sense about this idea of birthright citizenship and if this is something the Supreme Court's finally going to be done with? Because this is so, we can't have a country like this. Please tell me they're going to address this situation.
I feel like, Jesse, I feel like you ask me this every few times that we get to talk. And every time I'm like,
I do.
I would love to be able, like I said, to cover the auto pin challenge. I would love to be able to cover the birthright citizenship challenge, but I really have no idea what the court would do. Usually they take cases where there's been circuit splits, where courts have ruled certain different ways on issues. And my understanding is, I have an immigration reporter, he's actually our editor, our political editor, Stephen Dinan at the Washington Times, he covers this in and out. So he's the expert with how the lower courts have been treating the birthright citizenship issue. But my understanding is, I think many of them have ruled against the administration. So it's more likely than not the justices wouldn't want to touch something unless there's a circuit split. We'll see. I'd have to go back and look at my notes and check on that, but yet to be determined. That's one of the things I always look at, is how have lower courts treated this? If there's any confusion in lower courts, then yes, there's usually a likelihood that the justices will weigh in.
What about Letitia James? Is she finally going to go to jail?
Yeah, so the whole Letitia James, James Comey situation with the Clinton appointee basically dismissing those indictments, it's very interesting because the whole, I guess, critics of these indictments could argue, and they tried to argue, is that these two individuals can't be re-indicted, as well specifically Comey, because of the statute of limitations. However, there is a federal law that says that if there was a technicality with a charging document, that there's like a, I guess, a 6-month extension. So I could see the administration making that argument, but first possibly trying to go back, with a new U.S. attorney, someone else in Lindsey Halligan's position, and presenting to the grand jury, getting a new indictment, and then trying to make that argument, citing the federal law that, hey, the first charging document had errors. We get 6 more months to correct that. And here we have a new indictment. Now, with Letitia James, her case is a little different. She doesn't have the statute of limitations rule. So just like I mentioned with the replacement of Lindsey Halligan, whoever wants to step in that position, even someone from the Justice Department, I guess, since we're talking about mortgage fraud, could come in here and present the case again to a grand jury, get another indictment, and go forward prosecuting her. So, you know, I think she's more in a tough position than Comey, just because he can try to rely on that statute of limitations argument. But yes, I would not be surprised if the Trump administration goes and tries to get new indictments for both of them, because really it's the process is part of the punishment, and drawing this out for either, you know, Comey or James is part of what the president and his administration would like to do.
Good. That made me feel better. Thanks, Alex. I appreciate it. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And as you're well aware, if you watch this show at all, you're well aware of how much I enjoy Democrat pandering. It's just one of my favorite things in the world. They're just so nakedly shameless about the pandering they'll do to every single interview, different group. It's one of my favorite things in the world. It makes me laugh to no end. Jacob Frey is the mayor of Minneapolis. He's someone who very much wants to keep getting reelected mayor of Minneapolis. So if you want to keep getting elected mayor of Minneapolis, you got to learn to habla the local lingo. Here's how that goes.
That's not American. That's not what we are about. And we're going to do right by every single person in our cities. And so, to our Somali community, Daman Shabka, Somali Aid Kunul, Minnesota, Garahan, Minneapolis, Waan Kuji Janila Hai, Waan Ku Gereb Taganahan.
Love it. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.